Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Really glad to have you listening in today because we have an exciting odyssey of extraordinary courage to talk about. Today, James Campbell is our guest. James from Lodi, Wisconsin, and he is the author of The Ghost Mountain Boys, Their Epic March and the Terrifying Battle for New Guinea. It's the forgotten war of the South Pacific, and it's published by Crown Publishing. I've had a chance to read it, and Jim Packard with us as well. And Jim, you've had a chance to read the book as well. It's fascinating, isn't it?
And both of us enjoy James Campbell's writing so much. He wrote about Alaska in his last book and then went to the other side of the world, to New Guinea, and came up with this account of what is really one of the great battles of the South Pacific, the Forgotten War there and the Ghost Mountain Boys. The 32nd Division plays such a critical role in this, and it's the story of many of these people who were from Michigan and Wisconsin, and just a harrowing account of what it was like to live there. He went and decided he had to go retrace the route, and in doing so ended up with a fabulous story of his own. And together, we would like to send a copy of the book along to you when you pledge at 800-383-9772. Or, of course, you can do it online at WPR.org. A $150 pledge will get you a copy of The Ghost Mountain Boys and also the member benefit card, which includes
lots of
things. Breakfast benefits, two nights for the price of one. I checked where these 44 locations are that they're starting off with, and not only are they in Lake Geneva and Fish Creek and Cedarburg and Frederick, Wisconsin, but you're also in Galena, Illinois, and Chicago, Cannon Falls, Minnesota. So lots of exotic places to go and recoup the amount of your investment.
And we have a challenge grant to this. We have a goal of $12,000. I didn't want to mention that for the 90 minutes for the whole program.
Exactly.
And we have a $1,000 challenge grant. So if we make our $12,000 goal, we will receive an additional $1,000 from an anonymous donor, which is really very, very nice. And, you know, when you contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio during this program, as we said, we'll send you for $150, we'll send you a copy of the book. And you can do it. You can do it in a number of different ways. You can use electronic funds transfer. It's $12.50 a month if you want to do it on a monthly basis. Or you can just write out a check and have it over with. But whatever way works for you, that's what we want you to do. You know, you've tried online banking. You've tried online shopping. You've tried online
dating.
Dating. No, I haven't tried that. I haven't tried that, Jim.
I've heard that it's
I'm married.
Done.
I'm happily married.
I've been married a while, and I have heard that it is possible
to date
online.
Well, I'm suggesting we try online pledging.
Sounds
why not
like
pledge online?
Idea.
We can go to WPR.org, WPR.org. You can pledge online, or if you'd rather, you can call in at 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772. Help us out here today. Whatever amount is comfortable for you is what we'd like you to contribute. But when you donate $150, we'll send you a copy of James Campbell's book, The Ghost Mountain Boys, and you're really going to enjoy this book. And, of course, we put you right into that member benefit card and that two-for-one dining and two-for-one night stays at a number of places around Wisconsin.
It's two nights for the price of one at stays in 44 bed and breakfasts in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois. Also, two-for-one dining and then two-for-one performance and attraction benefits where you get two-for-one admission, symphonies, children's museums, theaters, and many more activities, and online shopping benefits as well. So why not pledge the $150 at 800-383-9772 and let one of our friendly volunteers talk with you for just a minute or two, get the information that's required, and you'll be on your way. And we'll be on our way to making our goal of $12,000.
That's right. You know, with about 100 calls or so at that $150 level, there you have it. It's all you need, about 100 callers. Actually, we won't even need that many, about 90 calls. That's all we need. You can be the first. Well, you won't be the first one because we've already had a few call in with contributions. But join the crowd here. Contribute now at 1-800-383-9772 or go online to WPR.org.
You know, the Ideas Network gives you access to authors, professors, politicians, experts in many fields. And what is that worth to you? What is it worth to you to listen to Larry Mueller every day, as many of you do? And you can listen all around the state because of our 800 service. That's paid for in phone calls that you make. So why not make your phone call right now, decide that Monday is a great day for a pledge, and it's a great day to pledge to Larry's show at 800-383-9772. $150 pledge will get you the book, the Ghost Mountain Boys, and also the member benefit card, which will entitle you to recoup your pledge in a couple of visits to a bed and breakfast, or to a restaurant, or to an attraction.
One visit to a bed and breakfast, I can tell you that right now.
We'll that's right
all
there.
It's good. One visit, you're going to pay for that whole thing. Jim, thanks a lot. I want to talk with James Campbell. Now, Jim has written a fascinating book, and I'm really pleased to have him with us. And certainly, if you have questions for him as we move along today, you're welcome to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Jim Campbell, welcome back.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
I tell you what, you were in the cold of Alaska, and now you were in the the exact opposite, the heat of New Guinea.
Yeah, I joke that I found the only place in the world that had more mosquitoes than Alaska, that being New Guinea. So.
Oh man, how did you come to write this book?
Well, it's been kind of a long evolution. I made my first trip to New Guinea in 1989 with my brother. He had just graduated from Lawrence University, and I was working down in Chicago at the time. And we'd always wanted to go off on a great adventure, and we'd grown up on National Geographic specials. So we said to each other, let's go off on a great adventure. So I put in for an extended leave of absence. My employer, of course, said no, so I quit.
Why not?
The only sensible thing I could. I think my father probably thought that was fairly irresponsible, and he was also partly inspired by it. But it was a great trip, and we went to New Guinea. We climbed the highest mountain. We canoed, we hiked, and we fell in love with the place. Then I returned in 1995 with my wife and my brother on our honeymoon. I wanted her to see. Yeah, right. Quite a honeymoon. Needless. Also, we had to sleep. There were men's huts and women's huts, so it's not your typical romantic honeymoon. But it was on that trip that I first learned. I'd learned about a land war on the first trip, and then I'd learned about the 32nd Division on the second trip.
And that sort of led eventually to your writing this book, which the amount of research you had to have done on this book was just amazing to me.
Yeah, it was enormous. As I said, this has been a long, long time in the making, but I had to familiarize myself essentially with the whole war in the South Pacific, which was extremely hard. If you take a look at the bibliography, I think it's 200 books long, if not longer. So it was quite a research ordeal.
When the story itself, why hasn't that story been told before?
And well, that's a great question. It's one the veterans also ask themselves. But the war in New Guinea was not reported very well while it was going on. Of course, it was overshadowed by Guadalcanal, which was going on simultaneously. And as the veterans that I interviewed like to say, well, the Marines were very, very brave, but the Marine photographers were even braver because they'd land the photographers first so the photographers could film them landing. But they got home and they were just more reticent than other soldiers because people didn't know about it. It would require a history lesson and a geography lesson. So they just kind of clammed up.
In a nutshell, describe what these guys had to do in New Guinea. I mean, you've got this wonderful book, but they had to march. Well, go ahead. You explain.
Well, they call it one of the cruelest marches in modern military history. 1,100 guys had to march across New Guinea from the south coast of the Papuan Peninsula to the north coast through endless swamps and dense jungles and over uncharted mountains with in some cases permanent snowfields. Then when they got to the north coast 130 miles and 42 days later, they went directly into battle against the Japanese. And this was only 1,100 guys. Everybody who was in New Guinea, everybody who participated in the war there for the 32nd Division suffered monumentally.
I mean, we're talking about sores and disease. And just to get there, to make that 132-mile trek, by the time they got there, these guys were in pretty tough shape.
Yeah, what I say they were physically shattered by the experience, and they were. They had dysentery, they had malaria, they had jungle rot, they had trench foot. Guys lost a third of their body weight on the trip, and they had to go directly into battle. And one military historian calls the battle a knife fight out of the Stone Age.
Yeah, it fantastic story. Robert in Menasha has a question for you, so let's go to Robert. Hi, Robert. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering if Mr. Campbell's researches into the Buna campaign had led him to any evidence that would support David Rubitsky's claim that he killed 600 Japanese soldiers all by himself on December 1st to 2nd, 1942, and that he was denied the Medal of Honor because of the anti-Semitism of his superior officers. Has he found any evidence whatsoever to support that claim?
Well, you're certainly not the first person to ask me that question. In fact, I've been asked that question dozens of times. Obviously, it's very, very controversial. I've heard convincing evidence on both sides. It's a subject, and this is probably not going to satisfy you. My apologies for that. It's a subject I chose to avoid entirely in the book. I didn't want to politicize the book in that way. It's a history, and that was just fraught with too much uncertainty and too much controversy. So I've chosen not to comment on that.
You did pick zero in, shall we say, on several both officers and sort of guys that, you know, that weren't officers that were out there pulling their weight and doing their jobs.
Yeah, I certainly zero in on MacArthur, and rightfully so, I think. There was an article in Liberty Magazine that, and I don't recall when it was printed, but it said the title of the article was "Why the 32nd Cannot Forgive MacArthur," and if you read the book, I think it becomes very apparent why they couldn't forgive MacArthur for all his hubris and arrogance, and you know, also after fleeing the Philippines, he was seeking redemption and also seeking the land victory of the first land victory of the South Pacific, which caused him to make some, I think, irresponsible decisions.
Jim and DePere, it's your turn next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hello. My father-in-law was in New Guinea at that time, and he never wanted to talk much about the story. But the story that I did get out of him, he's been dead for 20 years now, but the story I did get out of him is that he and a group of people were brought in early and put behind the lines and lived with the native peoples somewhat in preparation of the invasion. And the story I know was that he claimed that he was there for 6 months, and that's about all I know about it. Do you know anything about people being brought in behind the lines like that?
Well, I don't really. And again, I've researched this story for years and years. But I continually encounter more stories as I talk to more people, children, grandchildren, nephews and nieces of the soldiers who fought there. Perhaps you said it was your uncle or
my father.
Oh, your father. Your father was one of the Ghost Mountain Boys, one of the guys who marched across the mountains because they had lots of contact with the natives. They began on the south coast, which they developed into a base, and they lived there with the people. And the people still tell fascinating stories of the army being there. And then, of course, 400 carriers accompanied the 1,100 Ghost Mountain Boys across the mountains. So they had a lot of contact with the natives, too. But I don't know about any, for instance, intelligence seekers sent behind the Japanese lines to gather intelligence. I'm not familiar with that, no. Not to say it didn't happen.
I do have a copy of his separation records and reports from the military, and it shows that he was in New Guinea. He also got a Silver Star from Luzon.
Yeah.
But he never talked about the Luzon situation very much where he got the Silver Star, but the New Guinea part he talked a little bit about.
Jim, you should really get a copy of James Campbell's book.
I certainly will.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. And Jim and Menominee, we'll get to you in just a second. Just to remind everyone, James Campbell is the author of The Ghost Mountain Boys, Their Epic March and the Terrifying Battle for New Guinea, The Forgotten War of the South Pacific. It's published by Crown Publishing. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with James Campbell today about his book, The Ghost Mountain Boys. Larry Mueller here. Jim in Menominee, I believe, is next. So let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Yeah, my dad was in New Guinea, and he told me that they dropped him off there like in November, around Thanksgiving time. They told him it would take 6 weeks to get the Japs out of there, and I think he said it took him about a year. But he was there, and he got two battle stars, and he talked about the Battle of Drymore River. I can't remember what the pronunciation is. But he always talked about being in the machine gun nest, and the river was running red and pouring water on the guns to keep them from melting. And there was another battle he was in, but he didn't talk about that one. Do you know what that could be?
Well, you know, many of the guys who began at Buna and Santa Ana went all the way up the coast, eventually to the Philippines, and they called it the Hard Way Back. But he could have been at Ley, the Drinamore River, Hollandia, Biak, Morotai, and then on into Leyte and Luzon. So there's a great book, and suddenly the name escapes me, forgive me, about the entire New Guinea campaign, which will take you all the way up the north coast of New Guinea to the Philippines. But as I said, many of the guys went all the way up, which I can't imagine.
Yeah. you made that trek yourself, Jim.
Yeah, I did. I don't know that I'd have the courage to try online dating, particularly since I'm married. But I did make the trek across New Guinea. I figured if I were going to be writing about these guys, the only responsible thing I could do would be to try and retrace their route across New Guinea. And it was only the second time in history that anybody had ever walked across the Papuan Peninsula. So it was kind of a historic achievement. But as you know, I don't write about my experience in the book,
right?
Because I figured it wasn't, it was kind of irresponsible to talk about what I suffered when these guys suffered 100 times worse than anything I did. But we had a very hard time. I tore the ACL in my right knee. Some of the guys came down with malaria. One of the guys came, almost had septicemia. We had to get him out early, so otherwise he would have to have his leg taken off. And so it was an extraordinarily hard trip. But we finished in about 3 weeks, and when we were done, we got to sleep under clean sheets and celebrate. And they went directly into battle. So
yeah, it's quite a different situation. John in Chautauqua, we'll give you a chance. Hi, John.
Hello. Have you written anything about the women in New Guinea in the military?
About the nurses? No, I haven't. But you know, there's a great story to be told there.
Well, it's not even about the nurses. My mother-in-law was a corporal, a secretary.
She was in Port Moresby, or
you know, I have no idea where she was. The only thing I know is one time she got a right. See, the women were down low and the men were up high, and they always had to. I mean, the women were billeted down below. They worked up above where all the men were.
Yeah.
And she talked one time about getting a ride in a Jeep from Pappy Boyington. So, you know, I don't know if that gives you any hint as to where she might have been.
Well, she might have been in the somewhere in the Solomons,
she was in New Guinea.
Mainland
she
New Guinea.
On the mainland of New Guinea.
Well, then, if she did office work, the only place during the Battle of Buna and San Ananda where office work was done was in Port Moresby. And the Japanese would frequently bomb Port Moresby, and certainly they did not live in luxury in Port Moresby. It's a pestilent place, a hot pestilent place. So she would have had a hard time too.
She talked about getting to 135 in the day and then sleeping with a wool blanket at night because when it got down to 90, they were cold.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, the soldiers tell that story when they were walking through the jungles. They threw out their sweaters. They threw out their raincoats. They threw out anything they could to lighten their loads, even their ammunition. And by the time they got up into the mountain passes, they'd be caught in the swirling clouds of ice and rain, and they'd nearly freeze to death. So there are extremes of temperatures, no question about that.
And she was also outfitted for Alaska when they got on the boat.
You know, and that's something, and thanks for bringing that up, John, because that's something with the Ghost, the 32nd, when they made their march, they, as you point out in your book, they were not given, they had gear that was not really fit for a march of that type.
Yeah, they were one of the worst-equipped armies to ever go into battle. For instance, many of the guys came down with malaria, and they were supposed to have quinine to lessen the effects of the malaria, but they had, in a place like New Guinea, this sounds unbelievable, but they had no waterproof containers. So the malaria, the quinine pills crumbled in their pockets. And they had leggings, World War I leggings, and they had thick denims, and then they dyed their fatigues jungle green, and when the dye ran, it clogged the pores of their clothing, so the clothing couldn't breathe. So that's one of the reasons they developed these horrible skin ulcers. But when they left the United States, they had no idea where they were going. Some of them thought the Aleutians, some of them thought India, some of them thought Fiji. One thing they knew, though, is they were no longer going to Europe.
They were headed the wrong direction. The
wrong direction
for that. John, thank you. Irwin in Westby, it's your turn. Hi, Irwin.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. My father's been deceased for a few years, but served in World War II and spent a year on the island of New Guinea. And he spoke of stories of men going crazy and walking into the water for the isolation.
Yeah, I've heard lots of stories about battle fatigue and men, as you put it, going crazy. In New Guinea, they were short of troops, and the only way that these guys could get off the front lines, I think they eventually took them off when they had 104 degree temperatures. But going crazy was no excuse actually was no out. They weren't taken off the front lines, but these guys fought in swamps, in tidal swamps. And they lived there, and of course they died there, that were waist deep, and when the tide came in, chest deep, and there were crocodiles, and there were water rats, and there were fruit bats, and it was certainly one of the most horrible places in the world to fight a war.
Thank you very much for calling, and we have William online. William, are you there?
I'm here, William Black.
William Black, it's a pleasure to have you on, and my understanding is you served in New Guinea.
I did.
During that time.
That's right. I was with the Dixie Division, the Southern National Guard, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida troops.
And, you know, I'm sure James Cabell would even have some questions for you, but what was it like for you in that time?
Well, it wasn't as grim as some of the stories I've heard. Number one, we were hopping along the side of New Guinea, jumped up to Moratai in the East Indies, and then in Mindanao. We did not have the situation of those going in the Central Pacific where they had to go into Biak and Iwo Jima and so on. There was no place else to go. We had plenty of maneuver room and were trying to outflank the Japanese and cut off supply trails, so we had fewer casualties.
And Mr. Black, Jim Campbell talking here. Nice to meet you. I'm sorry I didn't discover you when I was researching the book.
Yeah.
So you were part of MacArthur's leapfrogging policy. Which I'm not sure if you know this, but after Buna was over, he said, "No more Bunas, no more head-on collisions of the bloody grinding type."
Thank goodness we got there after that.
We trained
above Buna. There were about six of us sent up to learn how to survive in the jungle from the Aussies, but we were before the Buna battle was over.
Yeah, Hampton Sides points that out in his book Ghost Soldiers, that the guys that eventually did the prison break had trained in the New Guinea jungles.
Yes.
On Ferguson Island, I think, just off the coast of Buna.
I was never near there. I heard about it. But...
Yeah.
Well, you sound like you're in pretty good health, William. How old are you?
I went 87 in April, and this last month I've had heart repair and plumbing repair, but I figured by 87, some of those repairs were pretty necessary.
Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it. It's great to hear someone with such a strong voice still going strong and with those memories. And I do have some information, a little information on him as well. He was the he also received the Purple Heart and the Silver Star for drawing fire to himself as the platoon circled around to ambush a machine gun nest.
Well, I focused just on the Buna and San Ananda campaign, but there were many battles fought on the island of New Guinea, as Mr. Black said, and anybody who saw any action in New Guinea had a tough time. You know, he said he didn't have it as tough as the other guys, but I'm sure he had it pretty hard.
Pretty hard. Well, why was it so hard? The Japanese were really trenched in and dug in, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. You know, before the 32nd Division got to the Papuan Peninsula, attacked the Papuan Peninsula, the Japanese had been there for 3 months, and they developed along an 11-mile front from Buna on the south to Gona on the north, which was essentially the Australian sphere, a system of hundreds of interlinked and reinforced bunkers. And they contained the only high ground on the coast. And the Americans didn't have anything to take out these bunkers. They had no destroyer off the coast shelling these positions. They had no flamethrowers, no 105-millimeter howitzers, and initially no tanks. So they used what one guy I interviewed called Civil War tactics. And they'd rush these bunkers, and they'd try and slip grenades through the firing slits. And, of course, many, many more guys died doing that than succeeded.
Lee and Stevens Point, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm an old Air Force brat, and my dad flew B-25 strafers in New Guinea. I'm wondering if you ever ran on any information about that.
Well, I didn't. Of course, he was Army Air Corps, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the Army Air Corps was extremely instrumental in the ultimate victory. First of all, they bombed Rabaul mercilessly, so the Japanese couldn't supply these guys at Buna and San Ananda and Gona. Essentially, they cut off their supply route. And when the Japanese had executed an overland invasion over the Owen Stanley Mountains of Port Moresby, the Army Air Corps guys just relentlessly bombed their supply line. So without that air support, that battle never could have been won.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I've heard story after story. I could keep you on here for a couple of hours.
I'd love to hear.
But there's a book out there called Air Combat at 20 Feet that was written by someone my dad knew in New Guinea. I don't even know how to tell you to find it. The guy's an attorney in Texas now. Because these guys flew about 10, 20 feet off the tops of the trees, and then they would drop down as they commenced strafing. And most of the 25s carried 10 to 12 50 caliber machine guns across the nose. And as my dad said, they'd put their head down. He said it gave us a chance to line up on bombing runs.
Oh man!
You know, they lost. Of course, the Army Air Corps lost lots of planes and lots of pilots. It's one of the most, no surprise, one of the most difficult places in the world to fly. In fact, you hiking through New Guinea, you find remnants of World War II through the jungles and in the mountains, and it's all there. It's still modern history in many ways.
Hmm. And even in the water, you did a little scuba diving and found things.
Yeah, my brother and I were scuba diving in Rabaul, which was the South Seas base for the Japanese Imperial Army. They had 100,000 soldiers there, and they had submarines there, and we dove on the submarine caverns, which was really amazing to see.
Wow. Thanks again, Lee, for calling. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. We're talking with James Campbell of Lodi, Wisconsin, author of The Ghost Mountain Boys, their epic march and the terrifying battle for New Guinea. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Well, let's set the stage. Let's talk a little bit more about General MacArthur. He was a guy that was kind of full of himself and didn't spend a lot of time, well, didn't spend any time in New Guinea, I don't believe.
Well, he spent a lot of time in Port Moresby.
Yeah.
But he never saw the Buna San Ananda battlefield. In fact, when the Australians were pushing the Japanese back from Port Moresby back across the mountains, he visited what was about 10 miles behind the front lines. He stopped out for an hour, gave them kind of a cursory, gave them cursory encouragement, and went back to Port Moresby. And the guys in the 32nd, his office in Port Moresby was known as the Ivory Tower. So there are not a lot of MacArthur. Many people think he's a military genius, and maybe he eventually was. But initially in New Guinea, as I say in the book, quite often his decision-making powers left him.
Yeah, left him. And he went through various commanders.
Yeah.
He had Harding, I believe, was the one commander that was very well liked by the—
He was the beloved general of the 32nd Division, and he was eventually demoted and shipped out of New Guinea because he wouldn't push the battle hard enough. He had written at the infantry journal for the infantry journal at Fort Benning. He had written the battle on the new army, the new triangular division, low casualty rates based on speed, quick strikes, not World War One tactics. But MacArthur was still focused on World War One tactics. In fact, he told Harding that the battle casualty figures revealed that he wasn't pushing the battle hard enough, so he was eventually replaced.
And the guy that replaced him, Eichelberger?
Yeah, General Eichelberger.
Eichelberger knew that he had to push that battle.
Knew he was put in an enormously tough situation, and I guess I'm ambivalent about Eichelberger's status. He eventually, of course, was there when the 32nd Division captured Buna and San Ananda, and may have contributed to that capture. But initially, he was brought in as MacArthur's henchman.
Yeah, and maybe you can describe what these guys had to face when they made these charges or attacks.
Well, you know, as I said before, they called it Civil War tactics, and that's what they were. These guys would, well, first of all, they were fighting in these swamps, dense jungles, or high kunai grass, which is 8-foot-high grass, razor sharp, so they'd get cut up by that. The sun was just beating down on them all day long. They were dehydrated. They were sick. They had fevers, 102, 103, 104 degrees, and they'd have to rush these bunkers, and the Japanese cut these firing lanes. And the guys thought, initially they thought, oh, great, we can get out of the swamps and take these. You know, this is an opening. So as soon as they'd take to these firing lanes, the Japanese machine gunners would just cut them down. So initially until they brought in the tanks, well, had they not brought in the tanks, which wasn't until late December after they'd been fighting for almost 2 months, they would not have accomplished what they accomplished.
Yeah, and why didn't they get that support?
Well, that's a great question, and there are a bunch of different answers to that, in part because MacArthur didn't think the tanks would work there. Also, he didn't have a very friendly relationship with the Navy, and the Navy was occupied at Guadalcanal, so they weren't going to send destroyers. And they just didn't have a lot of the big guns or ammunition they needed. Plus, MacArthur thought New Guinea was kind of a backwater. He just wanted to get it over as quickly as he could and get back to the Philippines, as he promised he would.
And as thinking about geography here, New Guinea is located very close to Australia.
That's right.
And there were a lot of Australians involved in this as well.
Oh, yeah. It's the great one of the great battles in Australian history, of which they're very, very proud, and rightfully so. But when the 32nd Division was first shipped over to Australia, they landed in Adelaide, and there were thousands of people there to greet them because they thought the Japanese were going to invade Australia, and that may or may not have been the case. But they were treated like heroes, and a lot of these people were young women, which, of course, pleased the soldiers immensely, and they were waving handkerchiefs and blowing kisses and throwing flowers, and so the guys obviously liked that.
Mary and Sun Prairie, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Yes, my sister was in New Guinea. They were headed for Europe, and then when the war broke out, they took them to Australia through the Panama Canal.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? They were participating in the Louisiana maneuvers and were sent to Massachusetts, and they thought they were going to Europe, as you said, and then they were shipped by train clear across the United States.
Uh-huh.
And is she still here today?
No, she is deceased about 6 years.
Yeah, but you obviously heard some of those stories.
I heard some, but she didn't say much. And when she came back, she was in very bad condition.
Did she come down with malaria too?
No, she didn't. Apparently, they had something to control that.
Maybe by the time she was there, Adabrin or something. Huh?
Yes, I think it was. Uh huh. But it was very. Very difficult because when the soldiers heard bombs and so forth, they would try to get up out of their cots and so forth, and the insects and everything were so bad.
Yeah,
and then they'd only have like their helmet for water for the day.
So they'd collect rain in it, right?
I don't know.
That's
about
the story
that.
I heard. Yeah, uh-huh. They were so hot.
Yeah.
And it rained, obviously, often, so they'd collect rainwater in their helmets, and that's what they drank.
And then just this last month, the Smithsonian has an article about the swamp ghosts.
That's a great story.
By John Darton.
Yeah, I read it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when we were there, they were bringing that plane out of the swamps.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that recovery program was going on just after we finished our trek across the mountains in last summer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. Yeah, people should read that. It's called, in this month's Smithsonian, the Recovery of the Swamp Ghost or something.
Uh-huh, yes, it was.
Thank you very much, Mary, for calling. Appreciate your call. James Campbell, our guest today. He is the author of The Ghost Mountain Boys. It's a classic war story. And I tell you what, it's the story of kind of a forgotten war, the epic march of the Ghost Mountain Boys across New Guinea, and you march 132 miles through the swamps and over the mountains and back into the swamps with improper gear, and then when you get there, you're thrown immediately into battle, into a terrifying battle. And it's a fascinating book. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, James Campbell, author of The Ghost Mountain Boys. It's published by Crown Publishing. Really pleased to have him with us. And Jim Packer joining us as well. Jim, that's a fascinating story, isn't it?
It is a fascinating story, and it reminds you of the quality of writers that we have in Wisconsin.
Isn't that the truth?
It's just a writer's paradise here, and it must be in the water or have something to do with the long winters. But we're able to turn out great stories, and this is one of them, The Ghost Mountain Boys. His previous book was The Final Frontiersman, and a great story of Haimo in Alaska, the last of his breed. And then we come to New Guinea and this battle of the Ghost Mountain Boys. And you find yourself learning about world events because of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here it is 50-some years later, and we're talking about it, and people are calling as if it were yesterday, or it's their parents or their in-laws who were involved. The people who fought in that battle, in those wars, now in their late 80s and 90s. And so it's just a remarkable achievement and a tremendous tribute to them that we're able to read this story finally and discover all of the things that went on. We know that in your own life it may not be that exciting or adventuresome, but we know that Wisconsin Public Radio means a lot to you, and that It's part of your culture. And so if you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio and to Larry Mueller on a regular basis, then this is the time to help support the program with a pledge at 800-383-9772, or you can go online at WPR.org. With a pledge of $150, we'll be happy to send along a copy of the Ghost Mountain Boys and also the member benefit card, which entitled you to two-for-one entrees at over 250 restaurants, performance benefits, two-for-one admission at symphonies and theaters and many more, and, of course, the bed and breakfast benefit that Larry likes, the two nights for the price of one.
Two nights for the price of one. Here's that number, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org. Our goal for the entire program is $12,000. I think we have a goal of $7,000 for this first hour and $5,000 for the last half hour. But if we meet our overall goal of $12,000, we will, when we meet that goal, we will also receive $1,000 in the form of a challenge grant. So that adds $1,000. An anonymous donor said, look, I'll put up $1,000 if you can meet your goal. And I, when we meet the goal, let's meet that goal. We meet it with your help at 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org. It only takes a minute. You're going to have a good feeling knowing that the rest of the day, knowing that you've helped support Wisconsin Public Radio, like Glenn from Naples, Wisconsin. He's a Wisconsin expatriate and lived elsewhere in the U.S. for many years, but listens to WPR on the Internet every single day.
Is it Naples, Wisconsin or Naples, Florida?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know.
I'll bet it's Naples, Florida. Probably Naples, Florida. He's listening on the Internet. And as an expatriate, why, we would welcome all Naples listeners to call in with their pledge right now and share the Internet with everyone else. There are about 700 people who are listening on the Internet at any one time. So if you are, then the chances are that you should make your pledge as well, because you depend on the service just as much as someone who's out motoring around Wisconsin or sitting at home. 800-383-9772 is our number, or you can do it safely, securely, and right now online at WPR.org.
One of the things that we, Jim and I, really enjoy about our job is we have the opportunity to bring to you authors from a variety, you know, on a variety of topics. Last week we talked with Michael Perry about his book Truck, A Love Story. Today he's from Wisconsin. Today it's Jim Campbell from Wisconsin, from Lodi, talking about his book, The Ghost Mountain Boys. And as you listen to Jim talk, you know he's done his work. He's done a lot of research. He's done a lot of work to put this book together. And it's, believe me, a wonderful, wonderful read. It was just captivating to read this book. And I could hardly put it down. I spent a lot of time yesterday, and I wound up reading the whole, finishing it off late last night just because I couldn't put it down. You might not want to put it down either when you get a copy of it. And when you call in at 1-800-383-9772, or when you go online to WPR.org and you contribute $150 or more, we'll be happy to send you a copy of the Ghost Mountain Boys, and we'll be happy to send you the member benefit card that Jim's been talking about, two-for-one dining and two-for-one benefits at a variety of 250 restaurants, I think, isn't it, Jim?
It is indeed.
And also, two-night stay for the price of one at 40-some bed and breakfast. And I kind of like going to those bed and breakfasts. It's kind of fun. I like the breakfast in the morning. I like the bed in the evening, but I like those breakfasts in the morning, too. They're wonderful. And just once, just use that once, and you probably pretty well covered the cost of your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, $150 or even more if you can afford that too. The number to call, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org.
And of course, if you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're aware that you are getting lifelong learning and the tuition is free. However, that isn't the only thing that is involved here. The programs are brought to you because you have contributed in the past, and we'd like you to contribute right now. Why not take this opportunity to renew a pledge that you may have made a years ago and dropped along the way? Or if this is the first time that you've pledged, why not do so right now? It's very quick, convenient. When you call 800-383-9772, there is a volunteer who is a listener and a pledge supporter, and we'll take your call and find out where you are and who you're listening to and the amount of your pledge. How you pay for it is up to you. There are many, many options available to you, from electronic funds transfer. You can use your credit card. You can pay by check. You can come in here with a stack of $1 bills if you want to, and I'm sure they'll be happy to take care of you. At 800-383-9772, we have a goal of $12,000 and that challenge grant of $1,000. If we make that, when we make that, then why not make your call right now?
Please do that. And we'll send you the book, by the way, in time for the holiday season. So you'll have that before the holiday season. And so that will help out, too. Maybe you've already had a chance to buy the book, and maybe you've read it at the library. But if you want to pass it on to someone else, or maybe read it first and then pass it on as a gift, you can do that as well at 1-800-383-9772. Heard from John in Madison, lives on Wisconsin Public Radio. He said, I've been traveling around the state for 35 years, and every preset on my radio is WPR with the exception of two. How's that? And John and Connie in Fitchburg say, a great resource, don't ever find anything boring, hosts are well informed, and the guests, like James Campbell, are excellent. What do you think of that?
I think that's a pretty good reason for you to make your pledge at 800-383-9772. Why not become one of the 15 people who have now pledged in this hour to Larry's show? 14 already. Yours mm-hmm. will be the next at 800-383-9772. And we can't emphasize WPR.org enough, because it's convenient, easy, secure. We will not rent your name. We won't sell your name or any of your information to anyone. That's closely guarded in-house, and I don't even get access to it if I wanted to find out. But it starts with your pledge. You decide how much you're going to pledge. The average is over $100. We're asking that if you pledge at $150 level, we will send you a copy of The Ghost Mountain Boys by James Campbell and the member benefit card, which, as we were talking, entitles you to two nights for the price of one at now 44 bed and breakfasts in Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota. I know that number will expand as the B&Bs hear about this opportunity. They will become involved, and we will tip you off as new locations are added. Starts right now, though, with your pledge at 800-383-9772.
Or go online to WPR.org and make your contribution right now. Really important for us to reach the goal. The only way we reach the goal is with your help and with your contributions. We have a goal of $12,000 for the entire 90-minute program. That's a lot of money, but you know what? There are a lot of people out there who can afford it. And maybe you can afford a contribution right now. When you donate, I donate $150. That would be $12.50 a month, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. If you want to do it on a monthly basis, you can easily do it that way. You can do electronic funds transfer. Jim, you do that, don't you, Jim?
Yeah. I'm a payroll deductor.
Payroll deductor. That's right. So it... You never even notice it. It's gone before you would get your hands on it.
I just find out when you get the mailings, you know, as to these opportunities to take part. I say, well, I'm an employee of the station, so I can't use that. But it is painless. It's been going on for years, and so I don't feel it. I just regard it as one of the necessary things in life. And as long as I don't have to pay it, you know, it's taken care of. That's all that's necessary for me.
And James Campbell, you're an author, and you're from Wisconsin, and you're a guy listens to public radio once in a while yourself.
All the time. All my presets are on public radio.
I know he's got two teenage daughters, and so I have a feeling that they may have a preset.
They listen to Hannah Montana.
They listen to Hannah Montana. Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you what, I doubt that we'll ever have Hannah Montana on the program. But we do have quality people like James Campbell. Quality radio, you know. I mean, James comes on and he's doing this. We're not paying him any amount of money, but anything at all. As a matter of fact, he's coming on as sort of a public service for us. But we quality programming does cost money. I mean, we've got expenses that we have with National Public Radio. We've the expenses of just operating the station. The expenses of free toll-free lines that we have so that anyone can call Wisconsin Public Radio with a question for any of our guests or for me or for anybody else who's on the air. And those, I forget what they cost, but it's quite a bit of money. And you can help maybe pay for a day. I don't know what a day would cost. Jim, do you know what a day of phones would cost?
You know, I'm going to work that out after the news.
Do the math on that. Do the math on that, will you?
What it takes for a day. But think of it. You've got the Deuce to National Public Radio and to American Public Radio as well. We've got the bureaus around the state in Milwaukee and Superior and elsewhere that we're paying for. The 800 service that enables all of you to take part in the call-in programs. The online service is paid for. So your phone call is so important because you are the biggest single contributor to the Wisconsin Public Radio operating budget. So that's why your call is important, and that's why it's an opportunity today for you to pick up a copy of the Ghost Mountain Boys and the member benefit card with your pledge of $150, $12.50 a month, I believe Larry worked out the math too, at 800-383-9772 or at WPR.org.
And I tell you what, it costs us about $424 to do. I've done the math in my head. No, I have not. Jennifer Dargan is helping me out here. $424 for one day. Well, I tell you what, $500 contribution puts you in the 9XM Leadership Circle.
Gets you the magic handshake.
Gets the magic handshake for me. I'm a member of that 9XM Leadership Circle. So $500, you're paying for the phones for a day. That's a wonderful thing. I'll tell you what, though. If you can afford $150, why not contribute at that level at 1-800-383-9772 or go online to WPR.org. We'll be back. James Campbell's got a lot more to say. In the meantime, keep contributing. Call in now with your contribution. We're talking with James Campbell now about his book, The Ghost Mountain Boys. It's published by Crown Publishing. Really happy to have him here today. And just to give you an update before we talk with Jim some more, we have about $7,500 to go to meet our $12,000 goal. So about $7,500 to make in the next 25 minutes or so. We make that with your contributions, one at a time. 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org, WPR.org. When we make that goal of $12,000, we get another $1,000 in the form of a challenge grant. So it's very important to meet that goal. Help us out now. Give us a call and make your contribution. Jim, one of the things that I, and before we go back to the phones here, one of the things that I really enjoyed about your book, you spend a fair amount of time on letters. You start the book with some letters, and then there are letters kind of throughout the book that were written by the guys.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds like such a brutal, unforgiving, unflinching story. And in many ways it is, but, you know, these guys were not professional soldiers. They were citizen soldiers, and I've tried to tell more than anything a soldier's story. I'd tried to delve deeply into their lives, and I begin, of course, the book with the love letters from the division surgeon to his wife, which I find absolutely heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And those love letters are threaded throughout the book, as are the recollections of the guys and diary entries. And in my opinion, it really makes the story, in some cases, a very tender and human one.
Yeah, I certainly would agree with that. And you must have had, well, you had access to a lot of people gave some very personal things to you and allowed you to print those things.
Yeah, and very, very, very courageously. You can imagine how hard it was for people to give up some of this stuff. And it was, as I said this weekend, at the Wisconsin Book Fest, which, by the way, was a great event. It was a profoundly emotional experience for me. It was really moving, encountering not only veterans but sons and daughters and grandchildren. So
yeah. Stephen Verocco, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Just to let you know, my father was part of the 32nd Division here in Viroqua, Wisconsin.
yeah.
where they took the whole unit. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been trying to research now for, oh, goodness, a couple of years now. I was thinking about doing the same thing, trying to find some things on the guys here. And I grew up with all of them. And, you know, growing up with these guys, there was never any mention of, you know, any traumatic or trauma. It was just always the good, happy stories. And it was you know, unfortunately, they're all gone now. But
yeah.
It was quite an amazing time to grow up as a young man listening to these people. And I was wondering if I could make contact with you somehow on your website or something, if you have such a thing.
Yeah, my website is ghostmountainboys.com, the title of the book, and then .com. And on that is a way you can contact me. There are also a lot of photographs on that. We shot a documentary film when we crossed last summer, which we're now trying to sell to a variety of different programmers. But you can watch that film there. And I'd love to talk with you. I'd also recommend the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. They have it's a great resource, a really capable staff, and without their help, my book would have been impossible to write. But I wish you a lot of luck.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And, you know, I think Steve brings up a good point. The guys in the 32nd really knew each other. I mean, some of them grew up, to grade school together.
That's right. These were really, really tight-knit units from Viroqua, from Beaver Dam, from Madison, from Stoughton, well, all over the state. In fact, the guy that led them over the mountains was Major Herbert Smith from Neillsville, Wisconsin. And he died in 2004 at 102. But, they didn't tell about – you get together with these guys. I got together in 2005 at a 32nd Division old-timers meeting, and they don't dwell on the hardship. They don't dwell on the pain or misery. They tell funny stories, you know, typical kind of GI humor. So I was living in the barracks with these guys, and they were shuffling around. They all had diabetes, and they all had many bypasses, but everybody would shower together in the morning, and they were like young men again. It was an amazing experience.
That's a great. You mentioned Neillsville, and you'll be speaking. You'll be doing a reading. You're in before Neillsville. You'll be at Madison Public Library
tomorrow night.
I want to mention that.
Thank you. Tomorrow night at 7, and then next week Tuesday I'll be at the Lodi Library. Then the following night I'll be at the Waukesha Library, and then the following night Thursday I'll be at Shake Rag Alley in Mineral Point, and then the following day I'll do some Book World events in Marshfield and Wisconsin Rapids, and that night in Neillsville at the American Legion. So I have a very busy schedule, on to about mid-December.
And I assume your schedule's up on your ghostmountainboys.com.
Well, it's about to be. I've been dragging my feet a little bit. It will be up soon, I hope.
Steve, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, the fact that they knew each other, I think they were kind of people like MacArthur sort of looked down their noses at the 32nd.
Yeah, it was a National Guard unit, and MacArthur was a professional soldier, so he didn't think much of these guys or the officers, but they proved themselves throughout the course of the battle. In fact, I went to the National Archives and spent a lot of time out there in Washington, D.C., and dug up these Japanese diaries, which were fascinating, and I've threaded those through the book, too. But one Japanese diarist writes about the evolution of their fighting skills. He said initially they'd fight as if they'd never learned a jungle fighting skill in their lives, which was true. But by midway through the battle, they'd learned a lot. They learned quickly and obviously out of necessity.
Yeah, they would. And when we think about this, how many guys were in there to begin with?
11,000.
11,000.
And then 1,100 Ghost Mountain boys. Yeah.
Yeah. And how did the Ghost Mountain was a fascinating place when they went over that mountain.
Yeah, I thought I'd just read a quick diary entry from one of my characters. He says, "You can hardly realize how wild and ghost-like this mountain country is. Almost perpetual rain and steam. We have been traveling over an almost impassable trail. Our strength is gone. Most of us have dysentery. Boys are falling out and dropping back with fever. Continuous downpour of rain. Bully beef makes us sick. We seem to climb straight up for hours and then down again. God, will it never end?"
Yeah.
And that pretty much expresses their misery.
And even the natives
Oh, they feared it. It was
they
haunted.
Feared the mountain.
They thought it was haunted by what they call Masalai, which are evil spirits, and they were terrified of it. And when I returned last summer, they were still terrified of that mountain. It's 10,000 feet. It's surrounded by these clouds of ice and rain. And in New Guinea, the mountains are the realm of evil spirits, or the high mountains.
Oh, man. Yeah. So in the end, of the 11... of the troops that went, at the end of your book, you talk a little bit about how many went into battle and how many actually came out unscathed. Well, I don't think anybody came out of that battle unscathed. But.
Yeah, nobody came out unscathed. The casualty rates were at 80 and 90%, which of course includes disease. But that, you know, that's why MacArthur said no more Boonas, but nobody came out unscathed. Battalions were the size of companies. Companies were the size of platoons. And many companies went in with 180 guys and came out with 20 guys. And
that's amazing.
It is amazing. And it was, you know, a savage war to be in and a savage place to be.
Yeah. Well, is there one thing that you one important thing that you took from all this in your writing?
Well, you know, someone just asked me that question the first time. I've been involved with the book for so long that I really haven't even developed that perspective. Yes, I guess what I would say is, you know, sending men into battle is a horrible thing, and it's not. Well, in this case, MacArthur didn't suffer. It was the GIs. It was the grunts that bore the burden of the battle. And to hear these stories is a painful, moving thing.
Yeah. James Campbell, our guest today, author of The Ghost Mountain Boys. Fascinating read. Jim Packer joins us. Jim, we have a goal of $12,000, and we're about $7,000 short of the goal right now. About $7,000 short, maybe a little less than that.
We got to roll up our sleeves and get to work then, Larry, because we don't want to let this goal slip away. 800-383-9772 is the number for you to pledge support to Larry's show and to Wisconsin Public Radio. A $150 pledge or $12.50 a month will get you a copy of The Ghost Mountain Boys. Hampton Sides calls it a classic war story. You know, for those of us who grew up in Wisconsin and heard about the exploits of the 32nd Division, the Red Arrow Division, we heard about this, but we didn't really hear the specifics. And now we finally have gotten the specifics of what went on in New Guinea. Just a hellhole of a place at that time. It may be better today. You'll find out when you read the book, because Jim is able to add his personal account of this, because he's covered the ground that the 32nd covered when it was in New Guinea and moving north towards those fateful battles. So that story is something that you will treasure, and if you're related at all to anyone who fought in that battle, I know that you're going to enjoy this book. And it's available to you with a $150 pledge at 800-383-9772, or you can go online at wpr.org.
You know, one of the things, it was a real joy to be able to do this program and to be able to host this program, because I get to talk with people like Jim Campbell and all of the other great guests we have on the program. We have many authors on the program over the course of a year. We try to actually favor or zero in, I should say, on Wisconsin authors. So anytime I have a chance to bring a Wisconsin author on the program, we certainly try to do that, because they often bring a great perspective. In this case, we have the great perspective of a story about Wisconsin guys who were in this horrible battle. And at the same time, I was really glad we talked a little bit about the letters, because I think the letters that James includes in his book bring a real touch to the book, and it really gives you an insight into kind of what they were thinking and the kind of people that they were, and it adds so much to the book itself. And I tell you what, when you contribute $150 or more, we're going to be sending you a copy of that book. So you'll be supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You'll be supporting the kinds of programs we do here. not only with authors, but with a whole host of people. We do a lot of programs that are advice-oriented. We do a Garden Talk program. We try to do things that relate to, you know, sort of your everyday interests. And it's especially nice to have authors on the program to be able to talk with them, and especially guys like Jim Campbell, who really go out of their way. They do the research, and then they're excellent writers and are able to bring that story and bring that whole story to life for you and for me. You know, we heard from Russell and Trempolo. He says, I'm retired. I travel a lot. I enjoy the wide range of interviews that you have, and it's a very relaxing kind of program. I really think that, too. I come away from this show every day kind of relaxed myself. I learn a little bit. I have some fun talking with people, not only with my guests, but with listeners like you. And if you enjoy that kind of programming, when you contribute, you're going to know that you're supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You're going to be helping us meet that goal of $12,000 for this hour. And you're going to feel good all day. Here's the number, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org.
You know, listening to public radio does give you a front seat to world, national, and state events. Here on this program, we really focus on Wisconsin, a lifestyle show that we find of importance, your home, your health, your pets, your investments, your computing. Wednesdays, we devote to matters of environment whenever we can, not necessarily just the environment in Wisconsin, but in a larger sense as well. But really, the focus is on Wisconsin, and I think that we're really the show that does that, that we focus on Wisconsin, and we don't try to exclude, but really the focus is there, and we want to know that you appreciate the program, and we find that out by asking you to pledge, and when you do, then we get to count that towards the goal of $12,000 for our program today, and we'll pick up that extra $1,000 in the challenge grant. So pledge right now online at WPR.org or on the phone. Talk to one of our friendly volunteers at 800-383-9772.
And we're at about $7,000 to go to reach our goal. We have about 8 minutes or so left in the program, so about $1,000 a minute. We can do that.
We can do that.
We can do that. We can do that. We've done it before, and we can do it with your help. When you donate $150, you're going to be helping us make that goal. You can help pay for things like news for National Public Radio, the phone lines for our studio guests. Jennifer Dargan told me it was something like $450, roughly $450 for one day's worth of toll-free phones. So $450, if you put $500 in there and you're a member of our 9XM Leadership Circle, or $150, you're paying for about a third of the day. So how many hours are we on, Brett? We're on 24 hours a day, aren't we? So you're paying for about 8 hours of phone lines with $150 contribution. That's one way to look at it. Or another way to look at it is, if I contribute, or when I contribute $150, I'll be putting in a vote for this program and for the kinds of programs that you hear during this 11 to 12:30 time slot. We think that we're providing some information that you're not going to get many other places, and we really believe that, and we try very hard to come up with programs that you are going to enjoy and that you're going to learn from. So with all that said, the only thing left for you to do is to call in with a contribution at 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org. It's quick. It's easy. You can do $12.50 a month if you want to. You can put it on your credit card. I've done that a couple times just to get the air miles.
Mm-hmm.
Done that. And you can do electronic funds transfer. There's a lot of ways that you can do it. But whatever way you choose, now's the time to make that choice. 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org.
And you may be saying to Larry, I've never pledged before. What's it like when I call? And that call is very short. I know it's going to be under 5 minutes. That's for you asking a few questions along the way. Otherwise, it's down to three or less. You answer some basic questions, your name and address, and we ask you how much you'd like to donate to Wisconsin Public Radio. That's the decision that you have to make, is how much. And we're saying, if you can afford $150, then why not make that call and pick up a copy of the Ghost Mountain Boys and the member benefit card. If you can't afford that, maybe you can only afford $100. We'll be happy to send along the Wisconsin Public Radio beverage mug, 32-ounce mug of clear plastic that you can take on the trail with you as you go to New Guinea or go to Lodi, go exploring in Haberman Park or any of the sites there. This is available with a $100 pledge. So you decide if you'd like to pay by credit card or if you'd like to be billed. If you're not sure how to donate, every dollar counts. Larry's talked about the dues that we pay for National Public Radio dues. Just an operational cost per hour is about $450, and you can go a long way to helping us with, you know, maybe a third of an hour or so.
You know what? You mentioned new contributors, and as I look up on the board, about a third of the people who are calling in with contributions for the program today have never made a contribution before. So they're new. If you've never made a contribution, or maybe it's been a while, maybe it's a couple of years ago gone by, I tell you what, your call now is very important because we would love to meet to receive that extra $1,000 in our challenge grant. And we don't receive the $1,000 unless we reach our goal of $12,000. With about $5,000 or so to go, we can easily make that goal with your help, with your contributions at 1-800-383-9772. Or go online to WPR.org. If you've never contributed before, this is a great time to do it, and you have about 4 minutes to do it.
And if you'd like to pick up the member benefit card, all you have to do is give us a pledge. If you can pledge $120, we'll give you the card, and that will entitle you to two-for-one benefits at restaurants and at museums, and two nights for the price of one at various bed and breakfasts in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota. There are 44 involved, including the Richmond Inn at Richmond, Illinois, and the Rosewood Inn in Hastings, Minnesota. We've got the Seven Pines Lodge at Frederick, Wisconsin. Some just wonderful places for you to go. And you can get there with two nights for one benefit. That will help you to recover the cost of your pledge, which you make right now with your phone call at 800-383-9772. Many first-time donors who've been listening to pledge drives for years say, I finally realized that you were talking to me. So we're talking to you.
We're talking to you.
And
that's
we're asking
right.
you to pledge on behalf of Larry that you listen to his program on a regular basis and to Wisconsin Public Radio and for Jim Campbell and his story today, the Ghost Mountain Boys, that we're happy to have had a chance to promote the book and to hear him.
And here we are with about 3 minutes to go before our program is over, and that'll be your last chance to receive a copy of Jim's book, Ghost Mountain Boys. But I tell you what, if you've been thinking about it, now is the time to act. Help us out here at Wisconsin Public Radio. When you contribute, whatever amount is comfortable for you, you can help us make that goal. We're moving toward the goal. We're not there yet, but we're getting closer. And we can go over and meet it with your contribution at 1-800-383-9772. Quick thanks to everybody who's contributed so far. I really appreciate all the people who have contributed. A special shout out to the new folks who have never contributed before. I tell you what, it's really we really appreciate it. And we're looking forward to having you as paying members of Wisconsin Public Radio. What about you now? If you haven't contributed, now is the time to do it. We have 2 minutes to go. We're going to have to go away in about 1 minute, Jim. But 1-800-383-9772, that number to call.
You know, whether you're in the car, whether you're at home, whether you're at work, you can listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. And, of course, you can go online at WPR.org at any time. You can get podcasts of some of those programs. Larry's programs will be in memory for 3 years. I said one year.
For 3 years.
3 years it'll be in
memory.
Oh,
my gosh.
And if you're a Wisconsin Public Radio member, you can get those in podcast form. So that's another benefit for being a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. We hope that you'll make your pledge right now. We've just got a short time before we have to finish up. We'd like to make that goal, and that is done when you pledge at 800-383-9772 or go online at WPR.org.
Big thanks to James Campbell for coming in today to talk about his book, The Ghost Mountain Boys. And thanks to you who have contributed. And if you haven't contributed, we're going to go away now, but you still have a minute or two to call in with your contribution. 1-800-383-9772 or go online to WPR.org. And thanks for listening.